Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN, and she is amazing. Oh, yeah, you know her from the Today Show, Jill Rappaport, when she covered show business, but amazing to me because she's also covered the world of pets for a very long time. Rappaport to the rescue! That is the name of her podcast, just like that, on Pet Life Radio. She is also an advisory board member for the Gray Muzzle Organization. And that is what we are here to talk about, Jill. It's adopting what most dogs are at animal shelters, and that is older. Can I say older? Is that politically correct? Older dogs.
Yeah, hey, I'm an older girl, too, so go stay old all you want. Be bold, go old is what I think.
All right, so you are fronting a campaign, as we say in showbiz, for the Gray Muzzle Organization, graymuzzle.org, to learn more. Let's start there. What is this organization?
Well, first of all, I'm so proud, and I, like you, have been on the advisory board for many years. And what I love about this national beloved organization, they're the only one of its kind, that the resources, the energies, and the mission is all about helping and saving seniors. Who would love that? They are so revered. They are so adored all over the world. And I'm so proud to be a part of the organization. And so we discuss this campaign that they do every summer. And it's a Sunshine and Summer Smiles campaign. And it's so great because it's aimed at helping senior dogs with their dental issues. And as you know, Steve, if not all, most seniors do have some dental issues, and it's a very costly thing. It can be, more importantly, a very painful thing. It's not just about bad breath. People think, oh, my dog's breath is bad. It's what lies behind the breath that can be ultimately, if not taken care of, life-threatening. So this is really a great campaign. We do it in a humorous, adorable way. I'm featuring dogs from Little Shelter in Huntington, Long Island, super seniors that are smiling, to encourage people not only to adopt them, but to please look at what's going on with dental care. Donate money to this campaign because every dime literally goes back into these animals' mouths to make a difference.
You know, getting adopted is difficult for any dog or cat at an animal shelter. They're in a tough situation, and even the best shelters on the planet, and there are many, many good ones, but it's not the same as being in a home. So those animals, to some extent, are stressed for the most part. Then if you add in pain, and these animals often are in pain. I mean, imagine your teeth not being taken care of for a very long time in many cases. It can be painful, and if you're in pain, you're not necessarily in a good mood, so it makes these animals less adoptable. And as you point out very correctly, it can impact other health issues or create other health issues as well, Jill.
Oh, yeah, and it's really scary. You know, like I said, you start out, and I hear from so many pet parents, oh, my doggy has the worst breath. And I said, but what's lying behind that? It's not just about the bad breath. There's an issue there, and you need to get to the bottom of it. And the last thing we ever want to do is to put our animals through unneeded stress, and we all panic at the thought of bringing them to the vet and having them go under anesthesia. And then as a senior, there's an added risk, for sure. But the point here is there are things you can do that may not require anesthesia. There's treatments, there's toothpaste, there's ways that you can help with your animal, procedures that you can do that might not mean going under where it can be a bit of a risk. But if they have to remove bad teeth or to clean the teeth, that is important, too. So whatever your options are, we have to be grateful we have options, right, Steve?
Mm-hmm.
But dental care is something we cannot ignore. Listen, I'm the worst offender of that. I waited until 2 years ago to deal with everything going on in my mouth, and heaven knows I had to practically have every tooth replaced. I'm laughing now, but it was 2 years of absolute hell. And, you know, I always say I do more for my parents, my pet parents, as a pet parent, than I do for myself. And it's the last thing we take care of, the teeth. We always think, oh, it'll go away. That pain never goes away. That pain is telling you something. And what this organization is trying to do, they're hoping to raise at least 30 $1,000. I'm hoping it will go way past that. And they have a wonderful donation family by the name of the Cook family. They're going to match every dollar. And then this organization, Gray Muzzle, will literally take every dime and put it back into this campaign and back into the animals' mouths to make a difference. They've already donated over $1.5 million to 119 shelters nationwide. And it's just incredible. I mean, the campaign started on August 19th. It runs till the 29th. And there's a giving grid up. Our videos are priceless, not only because the dogs are smiling, they're all super seniors, but they're all available for adoption. We're trying to get to you every way we can to tug at your heartstrings to take care of the teeth. And I'm just really proud to raise awareness for this because the seniors, as you know, Steve, they're the ones left languishing in shelters nationwide. They're the last to get adopted, along with the bully breeds and the special needs. And they're the underdogs. And if we can prevent one of the biggest problems they have, they will be much more viable for adoption.
Absolutely right. So let's talk a little about the fact that most dogs in animal shelters are older dogs or dogs you would look at and say there's a pit bull in general. Those dogs are mixed breed dogs or just larger dogs in general. So I want to focus for the moment anyway on the older dogs. And okay. I know you have a history personally of saying, okay, that's the dog nobody wants, or that's the oldest dog in the shelter. I'll take that dog. What attracts you to older dogs?
Well, I'm hoping the same thing that attracts maybe men who meet me. Isn't older great? I always say, don't look at the age, look at the person. Don't look at the age, look at the pet. My last adoption, which was 2 months ago, they think maybe he's 14 plus. He could be up to 17 years old. He's a little doxy. He was found wandering on the road with bloody paws. He's completely deaf, 95% blind. He had literally a heart murmur. He has terrible dental disease. He has so many things going on with him. And as they went through the laundry list of what was wrong, my only words that came out of my mouth were, when can I adopt him? And we had to wait 6 days to make sure nobody claimed him. For me, Steve, just the idea that someone could let this little helpless, blind, deaf senior wander in the woods to fend for himself with bloody paws, it just breaks my heart. And I can tell you firsthand, I got him 2 months ago. When I first brought him home, he would sleep 12 hours at a stretch and get up. He has a great appetite, thank goodness, and then fall right back to sleep. Now he is a little yapping, energetic, tail-wagging, trotting dog, follows me everywhere by scent because, as I said, he's completely deaf and 95% blind, and he loves his food. He cuddles up. He nestles in the nook of my neck, and I swear to God, he's like Dorian Gray. He is aging backwards. He is a completely different dog than he was 2 months ago. If you didn't, you know, his face is all salt and pepper. In fact, if you go on to the website on Gray Muzzle, my first video was with my seniors, and he's in my arms, and you can see, yes, he definitely looks like a senior, but he doesn't act it. And I know that by me taking him in, and even though he couldn't hear me, I whispered in his ear, this is your permanent loving home. You never have to worry another day in your life. And I know that I added years to whatever life he has left because he will only know love and peace now. Oh. And that's what I'm encouraging people to do, Steve.
Yep.
Listen, yes, I know when you get an older dog, chances are you're going to have less time with them than younger dog.
I want to talk. I'm interrupting you because I want to talk about that and also talk about your podcast when we come back. You know about commercials.
Okay.
Yeah, she knows. So we'll be right back on WGN with Jill Rappaport. She has been a hero to all animals for a very long time, horses included, by the way. Jill Rappaport is here, award-winning animal advocate. You know her from the Today Show and also a podcast called Rappaport to the Rescue, which is heard on Pet Life Radio. And also now supporting the Gray Muzzle Organization and the notion of adopting older animals, raising money so shelters can afford to take care of those dogs' teeth. And that is what she's doing right now. And we're talking about your own experience in adopting older dogs. And what you were saying or about to say is that, yeah, it can be tough. These are my words, not yours. That you don't know how much time you're going to have, but there is so much benefit to be gained by that. But I'm sure you hear all the time, doesn't it break your heart? You adopt a dog who's 14, 15, 16 years old. You don't really know very often, and you don't know how much time you have left.
You don't, but I will tell you, my adoptions, and the one before little Nathan Detroit, which is his name, was Oscar Mayer, another doxy. He was 8 years old, returned three times for being a little nippy, and I'll never forget, it took me 6.5 hours to get him to trust me at the shelter to get him into the car, because every car that pulled up, Steve, he would cry, hoping it was the former owner to come back and get him. And I feel like, yes, on paper, you may not have, when you first take in these dogs, you may think to yourself, I'm not going to have as much time with them. But I've had two live till 20 and 21. Listen, we should all get that lucky. But I can tell you, I feel very confident in saying, when you take one of these animals that's been dumped, literally, and you give them the love and the attention and everything they need, they do thrive. And I feel they exceed in the years that were meant to be, because they want to be there. They know you saved them. And maybe I've just been miraculously lucky, but it's happened to me every single time. And I want to tell your listeners also something else. I love puppies. Who doesn't love puppies? But I am so much happier with an older animal. They are been there, done that. They'd rather sleep on the couch than eat the couch. They sleep when you sleep. They're so chilled. You know, when they're a little older, they're not pulling on the leash. They're not running away every 5 minutes. The joys of a pet a little bit older, I think you can't even put into words how much better it is, at least for someone like me, when they're more chilled. Listen, puppies are great and everyone loves them, but they're the first to get adopted. And these older animals have so much to give. If people would just open up their hearts and their homes to them, you would be amazed. And the gift you give back. And I have a friend that only takes hospice animals. You know, I take all the seniors. She goes into the shelter and she'll say, I want the one that has only weeks left to live, whether they're sick or whatever the situation.
Yep.
Talk about a living angel. And she feels so gratified. She had one dog, they said, maybe has a few days to live. 2 years later, Steve, hello, dog is still here. And I'm just saying, it's such wonderful feeling when you can give them the best life. And even though it's always a heartbreak and you're never, I always say when one goes, a piece of your heart goes with them, but I immediately rescue another one and try to give them the best life too. And that's what we were put on this planet to do. You're the same way, Steve. And I want to encourage people, from my experience, it's been the best gift I could ever do. I mean, people were saying, bless you, but I also saw the people looking at me going, you just adopted a what? A 14-year-old blind deaf dog? They're looking at me like, seriously? And I look back at them and I go, seriously? Why not?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can tell you, the joy that I have from this little angel, I can't even put into words. We eat our meals together. He's, like I said, he sleeps in the nook of my neck. He's not a kisser. He's, you know, my other dachshund was very kissy. This one, no kissing. But he's a cuddler, and he loves to be picked up, and I never let him do the stairs. The one thing he's got working for him now, he's got a, knock on wood, he's got a very good back. And you know doxies have a problem with their back. He can lift his leg to do his business, and at that age, that's a miracle. So I'm protecting whatever he has, I'm protecting it with everything I can, because he's limited in so many other ways.
You know, I want to ask you about, because we only have a couple minutes left at this point, but I want to ask you about this notion. Like, you are supporting the idea, and for more information about this, graymuzzle.org, about adopting older dogs. I led a campaign several years ago, many years ago at this point. It was Seniors for Seniors, I think is what it was called. And the idea was that, and it wouldn't include you, you're Dorian Gray, you're going backwards, but the idea was adopting as a senior. Adopting a senior animal. I still think that is the greatest gift for both ends of the leash.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's two schools of thought on that. You know, senior, if you're a little hearing and sight compromised, and then you adopt a dog that's also hearing and sight compromised, it can be a little tricky, you know. You could, heaven forbid, trip over them, or, you know, you have to be careful. Like, it's a fine balance. I mean, and I know that now because I am a senior and I also have a super senior. But, you know, yeah, I wear glasses and I think my hearing's okay, but I'm not as great as I was 10 years ago. So, you know, there's some, you have to be careful. You don't want to, heaven forbid, if you can't walk right and you're trying to walk the dog, you don't want to trip over them. But I do feel emotionally it is the best thing in the world you can do. And, it, you know, senior, remember, a senior dog, a big dog is considered a senior at 7 years old. And for a little dog, it's 8 or 9. So, and they could have so many more years. I'm not saying everybody, I wish you would, but I'm not saying everybody should run out and get a 14-year-old. But, you know, senior is considered 7 and up. And if people would just go older, we would, A, number one, clear out the shelters and at least make them, you know, where there's room. When you take one, you make room for two. You're really saving two lives. So if the people would be open to taking an older animal, we would alleviate the problem that is just the worst it's been in 20 years right now in the shelter system. Steve, I'm sure in your area, there isn't a day I don't pick up, you know, look on my phone and I see a Google alert that some shelter is closing down or no more intake. I mean, it's really dire right now. And what do you think is happening to the older ones? Come on.
Yep. And it's it's not only go older, it's go bigger, too, because those big dogs.
Bigger.
Yeah. Especially the dogs that look like bully breeds. They have a more difficult time being adopted.
Oh, my goodness. The bigger dogs, the bully breeds, because as we both know that there's no such thing as a pit bull. That's the slang term. And the black animals, the black dogs.
True.
Have the most difficult time getting adopted because they don't photograph well. I remember walking into a Nashville shelter with Emmy Lou Harris, who wrote a song about the plight called Big Black Dog. She's the one that told me about the fact that black dogs don't get adopted. I never knew that that was really a situation. And we went into a shelter together in Nashville, wouldn't you know? One cage was a bully breed, then a black dog. Bully breed, black dog. It was shocking to me. Pure black lab sitting in a shelter. Why? Because they're bigger, they're older, they're black, and they don't photograph well.
Well, clearly.
So we have a lot of situations going on now that are dire.
Yes, and clearly Jill Rappaport has nothing to say. You can hear more at Rappaport to the Rescue on Pet Life Radio, graymuzzle.org, to learn more about the Gray Muzzle Organization and what we're talking about, which is this notion of taking care of their teeth so they are more likely to be adopted. We'll have you back on soon because you're amazing. Thank you, Jill Rappaport.
Oh, Steve, thank you. The campaign's called Sunshine and Summer Smiles. And, Steve, I am a huge fan of yours, and I'm honored to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, you've got it backwards. I'm honored to talk to you. But thank you, Jill. Thank you. I'm not typically here to talk about internet trends or trends on TikTok or trends on Instagram, but I'm about to because this one involves cats. Now, we already know that the most watched videos, let me rephrase that, the most watched family-oriented videos online involve cats. I'm not quite sure why, but cats declaring wars on printers has become a thing. It's warfare. Well, not really. So here's what happens. The cats are attracted to printers because they're warm places. They emit heat. Cats like that. And printers are not usually down on the ground. They're up somewhere on a table, on a desk. And cats like perches. Also, the printer might be near where you are working, and cats want to be near you. So it's not unusual. And you know this if you have a cat, for your cat to hang out on your printer. But here's what happens. Unpredictably, from the cat's perspective, out of nowhere, the printer goes on. And that makes the printer even warmer. The cat likes that. But what's more, then the paper starts to shoot out. And that's when the war begins. It's not really a war. The cats are playing. So the sudden noise, the movement of the paper, their prey drive kicks in. And actually, yes, it is. It's true. Their prey drive kicks in. But in truth, they're having a good time. And they're also curious about that paper flying out, which, by the way, In many cases, they crumple up. Imagine wanting to print an important contractual document. And in fact, one video showed that. This woman says, well, I just signed my new contract with the company, and now I'm printing it out. And then you see the cat not only attacking the paper, flying out of the printer, but what's more, the cat is then crumpling up the paper. So it makes for a funny video, right? Well, it's gotten to be a trend. Cats declaring wars on a war on printers. And if you type those words into any search on TikTok or on Instagram, you will find video after video after video after video of cats playing, because that's really what's happening. So what is happening is they learn that this is a warm place to be. They like that warm place because it's up off the ground. They may further like that warm place because it's near you. But they've learned that if I hang out here, the paper's going to fly out and I'm going to have a fun time. It's just like where you keep your cat's toys. Your cat may go to that place. If it's behind a closed door, they might even learn to open the door, pound on the door to get your attention so they can play. And they're ready to play with whatever comes out of the printer. It's just one of those new trends, and I wanted to tell you about it. My buddy Phil Arkow is the co-founder, president of the National Link Coalition. It almost sounds like a little game you might play with little paperclip things, but that's not at all what this is, Phil, is it?
No, Steve. It refers to the fact that animal cruelty is not a standalone issue, but in fact very often linked with child abuse, domestic violence, and elder abuse. And our basic premise is that if we intervene early to stop animal abuse, we not only protect animals, but we can get an early head start in preventing other forms of family violence and community crimes.
You were the guy who years ago, because I was there, I was on the board of the American Humane Association at the time, and you came to this organization and said, we need to work together. That I believe, I'm going back many years, I believe there is a link between violence to animals and animal abuse and later violence perpetuated to human beings. Well, it turns out now, of course, it's almost common knowledge that that is indeed the case. And in fact, the term the link is now a term used in law enforcement to mean exactly that. What gave you the idea to even think about this years ago?
Oh, it was way back in the 1980s. Couple of things happened. I saw veterinarians who were not mandated to report child abuse at the time, while pediatricians were mandated to report child abuse, and veterinarians weren't mandated to report animal abuse. I thought, what's wrong with that picture? Today, veterinarians in 43 states are either mandated or allowed to report animal cruelty, and that's been a major step forward. That was one of the things that got me started on this.
Well, I want to talk about veterinarians reporting abuse as well. So a dog comes in and there is suspicion, or a cat. And it actually, I believe, happens more often with cats than dogs. And the animal comes in, no matter, and there's a suspicion of animal cruelty here. Veterinary professionals, in my opinion, have a responsibility, and you'll talk about legally, in some cases, are mandated then to report. But what happens from there, even if they do report?
Well, the first thing is that there's been a lot of reluctance for them to report because they're afraid of losing a client. And we've been making major strides in getting the National Veterinary Associations and now the legal structures in 43 states to give them cover if they do make that report. And one of the exciting new developments that just came out last month, AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, headquartered right there in your hometown of Chicago, has published three templates that are customizable forms that veterinarians can fill out to set up a policy in their practice so that when a case of animal cruelty walks in the door, or for that matter, domestic violence or child abuse, they've got a standard operating procedure in place, and they know, everybody on the staff knows what to do with it. And it's an exciting series of documents to help get vets involved with this. What happens at that point is it goes to whoever the investigating authority is in that city or county, and they take it from there, and they determine whether there's enough information to proceed. Meanwhile, we're training veterinarians all across the country and all around the world in veterinary forensics and using their considerable expertise to help courts determine whether or not the injuries an animal suffered were accidental or caused as a result of human intervention.
That's a huge topic. So let's say the veterinarian actually feels and even brings in, and there are such things now as forensic experts in veterinary medicine who can help determine that, okay, this was intentional. This wasn't a dog falling off a bed. This was intentionally done to this dog for whatever the reason. Are we then seeing, though, so we can do that, but are we actually seeing charges being filed? And if they are we then seeing prosecutions?
Absolutely. There is always that possibility. So we're training prosecutors to take this more seriously, and we have a growing number of cities that have prosecutors specifically trained in this. And then another new development, the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges is coming out with a series of guidances for judges in family courts to how to handle animal cruelty cases and to ask about animal cruelty when they're investigating other matters. And they've come out with these tools for, I think it's 4 states right now, and they have a few more in the pipeline. So we're getting the judges, we're getting the prosecutors, we're getting law enforcement all involved with this.
Now, when you began all of this, pets were then oftentimes considered members of the family. Today, they are almost always considered members of the family. So there's a couple of issues here. One is the, I think, important issue of animal abuse. Secondly, where there is animal abuse, there are likely other crimes going on. And thirdly, one of those other crimes may be violence to other human beings. Can you comment on all that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the whole premise behind the link. When animals are abused, people are at risk. And when people are abused, animals are at risk. And we're not saying animals are more important than people or people more important than animals. We're not saying that we need to concentrate only on the human violence because, of course, the animals suffer as well. The fact is, if you prevent one form of violence, you can prevent the other.
Aha. I remember when, way back when you presented that notion, there was some cynicism. Today, I think more people agree and understand, but are we actually seeing law enforcement stepping up? And are we actually seeing, maybe more importantly, the judges saying this is prosecutable?
Yeah, absolutely. But again, like any other criminal case, like any other crime, animal cruelty needs solid evidence. It needs witnesses willing to testify. It needs specific details. And a lot of people who just get emotionally upset about an animal being mistreated don't understand that. And they have to realize it gets treated like a burglary, a robbery, a homicide, any other crime. It needs solid, substantial evidence. And that's where veterinary forensics, among other things, comes into play.
Which is increasingly important when we're talking animals, because the animal cannot say, this is what happened to me 3 days ago. They don't have the ability to do that, of course. But others can tell what's going on with that animal. They say that the pandemic, don't you like it when people who interview you say, they say, I don't know who they are necessarily, but they do say that there was a pandemic within the pandemic. That pandemic within the pandemic, domestic violence. And that does tie in to animal violence. As we've talked about already, there are some, I think, some good things happening on that front, and we'll talk about that and explain how you can learn more about The Link and the National Link Coalition. Its co-founder and president, Phil Arkow, will be back on WGN. Called the National Link Coalition. Explain what this non-for-profit organization that you co-founded, that you're the president of, is all about, Phil.
It's about protecting animals and people by recognizing that violence against one species very often involves violence against another. and that animal abuse and human violence are very often linked. And if we prevent abuse against animals, we also can very frequently prevent child abuse and domestic violence and elder abuse.
I know lots of organizations have been working on this. It's a national effort. I believe you've led the charge. Purina has led the charge, saying it's really important that people who are victims of domestic violence, who are likely to have a pet, because statistically, all of us in America are likely to have a pet. Most homes have at least one pet in this country, and those include homes where there is domestic violence. So they say we need somewhere to go with all members of the family, all members, including the pet. That hasn't been the case. It is slowly changing. And then the government cutbacks and whatever politics may have held things back. So can you tell us where we are with that now, Phil?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, statistically, we know not only do most homes have pets and most homes with children have pets, but their highest level of pets are in homes where there is domestic violence. So the
say that I want to stop you, Phil.
Targeted,
Phil, I'm interrupting, but that last sentence I'm unfamiliar with. So say that again about domestic violence victims and pets. They're even more likely to have pets.
I may have misspoken. There's an extremely high rate of pet ownership in homes where there's domestic violence. And the animals are often targeted as collateral damage, as a way for the abuser to exert what we call coercive control. And by threatening or actually harming the animals, it keeps the rest of the family trapped in the toxic relationship. And so millions of women and children don't leave home unless they have provisions to take their pets with them. This has changed dramatically in recent years with awareness of this fact. 97% of women calling the National Domestic Violence Hotline said that fear for what would happen to their pets if they left was keeping them from leaving, and 50% actually wouldn't leave unless they could take their pets with them. As a result, we have more than 300 domestic violence shelters in this country right now that also accept pets to keep the whole family together where they can heal together. And funding is available for this. You mentioned Purina. They've been working with Red Rover and the Purple Leash Project to provide funding for domestic violence shelters to build facilities. And I'm sure you've talked to Katie Campbell and her people about that. But one of the newest developments is that there has been federal funding for this through what we call the PAWS Act, the Pet and Women Safety Act. And that was threatened to be cut off with the current cutbacks in federal government spending. And fortunately, just last month, that was reinstated. And so there's $3 million a year now available from the federal government as well to help domestic violence shelters build housing so they can take care of the dogs, the cats, and the other animals. Something that just crossed my desk last week, there's one agency in Maine that's now building a stable to provide homes for the horses of domestic violence victims. And that's a whole aspect we haven't really thought much about until now.
That's very cool. I had not heard about that. So I want to talk a little more about this, because not only are we providing safe haven where otherwise people may not leave for the animals and for the people, we are, I think, I was going to say theoretically, save lives, but it isn't theoretically, Phil. We are talking about lives being saved in some cases by people getting out of such a circumstance where they are regularly being abused.
That is absolutely correct. We publish a monthly newsletter. It's called the Link Letter. And every issue has a half a dozen news articles in there from around the country that frequently involve cases of animals that were killed as a way to intimidate a girlfriend, a wife, the children. So, doing these kinds of programs, we're not talking just theory. It's real. It saves lives.
Yeah, and sometimes human lives, too. If things go on long enough, the abuser may do more than hurt that individual, it does happen where they die. And also there's child abuse often going on as well, I believe.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is incredibly important. The work you do is incredibly important. I believe there's a federal bill or a couple of federal bills, I don't quite know, that will actually, and this, and with this government stuff going on, actually creating something new is amazing. But that's how important it is, where there may be a new group in federal government to actually enforce animal abuse. Do you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah, well, right now there are several bills in Congress that we're looking at. And let me preface this by saying that any bills that are in Congress invariably take 6 or 8 years at the minimum to work their way through.
Lovely.
So, okay. So we're not holding our breath saying that these are going to pass immediately, but I'll tell you what they are. One is a bill that would require the National Clearinghouse on Child Abuse and Neglect to include information about animal cruelty in their cases. Another would establish an animal cruelty crime section within the Department of Justice. Another one would establish a similar task force within the FBI. There's another one called the FIGHT Act, Fighting Inhumane Gambling and High-Risk Trafficking, which would make it illegal to take children to dogfighting or cockfighting, because those animal fighting events are not only incredibly harmful and brutal to the animals, but they're strongly linked with racketeering, narcotics trafficking, weapons offenses, and various other crimes.
Yeah, absolutely true. And we've talked about some of those bills with Wayne Pacelli of Animal Wellness Action. If someone wanted to learn more about the Link Coalition and also sign up for your Link letter, the newsletter, how do people do that?
Very simple. Go to our website. It's very easy. It's nationallinkcoalition.org. And you'll find it with all sorts of free resources. And the newsletter is free.
All right. I like free. Who doesn't? NationalLinkCoalition.org. Have I got that right?
Right. Link, L-I-N-K. You got it.
All right. I've got it. You've got it. You've been doing this amazing work for decades now, may I say. Phil Arkow, thank you so much for joining us always and for bringing us up to date. Thank you. Frankenstein rabbits. Some call them zombie rabbits because these rabbits have growths that look like horns coming out of their face. It's a real thing. And this has been going on for forever. It's a naturally occurring papillomavirus that happens in rabbits. And the good news is you cannot catch this virus from a rabbit. Your dog or cat cannot catch this virus from a rabbit. It's like a benign tumor, and it doesn't cause the rabbit any discomfort as far as we know. They look like little horns. But if that little horn comes out of the mouth or the eyes, it can affect the eyesight or the ability of a rabbit to eat, and then that's a problem for that individual rabbit. But no zombie rabbits, nothing to worry about here. No matter what the internet says, in this case, the internet is not always right. It's not really a danger. I will talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.